Alright, this is Pure Decking, show number 477 for Thursday. What the hell is today? April the 18th, 2001. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and for anyone who hasn't figured it out yet, Tetris is an inventory management survival horror game. Tonight.
Trying to fit everything on the shelf. Gotta go on the shelf.
And if you make a full line of stuff, it disappears. Where does it go? Actually, we know where it goes. In a multiplayer game, it goes onto your opponent's board. We have a madman. What's up, madman?
I have bourbon, and I have to go in the office again tomorrow. You're going to completely ruin my pod schedule. Terrible.
Bastards. And we have an RU.
Well, so, how's things been?
Interesting. So.
Yeah, oh, we don't want to live in interesting times, Morps.
We are living in interesting times. Madman, I don't care. We are living in interesting times.
Okay.
Noticed.
I've got a couple of stories tonight. You let me know how that future is working out for you. Let me just tell you.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being black-pilled because it just lets you know exactly where you are on the timeline.
So, I think we're very much Brave New World.
Unfortunately, Brave New World was the model rather than 1984. So, because it's not that the information's not there. It's not that you're being controlled by an Orwellian government. It's that nobody gives a shit.
That's but don't worry, if we properly drug everyone, the ones that do give a shit will stop caring.
That's the bit I'm having trouble fucking getting my head around. Like, if I'm seeing this, how is no one else not seeing this?
They're too busy looking at stupid TikToks on their phone.
Like, I know it's probably been overdone. I'll just do 2 minutes, but how does Elon Musk think he's going to live through this?
Well,
the IRS, IRS is going to grab him. They're going to do a fucking massive hit piece on his own personality. They're going to destroy the guy.
Oh, they're already talking about setting out this nice documentary about him being rushed right now.
Yeah, I know. But how, like, Elon Musk must be a pretty clever dude, right? Either he knew this fight was coming and he's ready for it and he thinks he can win. He doesn't get a seat at the table without playing by the rules, you know?
He might also be taking the fuck it, I don't care approach.
But they will burn him to the ground.
He's got fuck himself money. If anyone can do it, it's the world's richest man.
Dude, no. No, he's going up against forces he does not understand. Well, I believe he does not understand. And if he does...
Well, the part
balls
I think,
on that man.
The part I think is funny is you have got damn near every right-wing news source proclaiming him the next savior. Damn near every left-wing news source declaring him Satan. Which is amusing because a couple of years back it was the opposite of that with the whole Tesla thing when he first started pushing electric cars. But all he said he wants to do is lighten up the moderation, get rid of spam bots, fix authentication, and try to allow free speech, whatever that means. He hasn't actually seen a policy. He doesn't even actually own the damn thing yet. He's just hasn't
no, I know.
To purchase it. But it
I
is.
I mean, if this is
all
what's
of the
happening
reaction
to
it, yeah. I mean, for you see the conspiracy theories about, oh, they've been manipulating the algorithm and now they're undoing it because they want to bury the evidence before the new management comes in. Let's be real. We all know what he's going to do. He's going to come in. He's going to monkey with some policies. He's going to change out the management infrastructure. You know he's not going to run the damn thing himself.
Of course not.
And in a couple of years, he'll spin it back out as another public company, make a couple billion on it, and call it a day.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to let him do that.
He's going to have to go in the back rooms and say, no, look, we're not really, you know, yeah, we might reactivate Donald Trump's account for shits and giggles, and we're going to let people troll, but...
And then there's another side. There's the conspiracy side. That this is controlled. This is exactly what they planned. This is to destroy Gab and what's
Parler.
And Parler, yeah.
Oh, try to keep people from fragmenting the platform?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm more along the lines of, yeah, this is organized opposition control. This is they're letting a little bit of the pressure out of the valve right now.
That could be. That, I mean, I'm certainly not saying it's not. But I am kind of wondering if it's I mean, because when I first looked at this, I'm trying to think, what has he got that makes him think he can, quote unquote, fix Twitter? And what immediately comes to mind is all the AI developers he's got hired in at Tesla. Now, he bought Twitter independently of Tesla. So he's not, you know, set it up for a merger. Of course, once he owns both, it doesn't matter. But I imagine he's got something he intends to do, because he was talking about open sourcing the algorithm. So he's got some business plan in mind. If he pulls it off, we'll see. If not, whatever. I don't know. I'm not rushing out to set up a Twitter account again. I haven't used the damn thing in a decade. I don't see any reason.
I'm not an Elon Musk fan either way. Like, I don't have an opinion apart from he's just another dude, you know. But I just don't see them letting him get away with this. Don't get to threaten their power like this. They've spent way too long.
Al Hazard in the IRC says, wasn't Gab and Parler already dead? Yeah. No, well, no. Parler
depends
was.
Who
Gab's
you talk
not.
To. Depends who you talk to, man.
They're up and running, and they have users.
They are trying to go after Section 230 now. Gee, isn't that funny? It's like, go back 4 years. What was happening? I mean, it's in my mind, it's all wait and see, because nothing's actually happened yet. So, we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, moving along. As I said, didn't want to spend too long on it.
So, let's start off with some good, you know, what sounds like it would be good news. It's not. But Apple is buying into Right to Repair, sort of, with their DIY repair service, now available in the U.S. So, this is, I mean, it sounds like they're buying into Right to Repair. Until we get to the second article, which I'll go ahead and throw the link in now, where you see the kit you have to rent from them for $50.
Oh, so it's not Right to Repair. It's, we'll charge you to repair your own shit.
Yeah.
Well, they'll rent you the tools you need. And when you see what they say you need to fix an iPhone, the goal here is to say, oh, you try to get most people who are all Right to Repair, rah, rah, to then look at it and go, oh, I don't want to mess with that. That's what it is. They're going, see, look how hard this is, guys. Apple is launching its DIY phone repair service in the U.S. today, making spare parts available for its iPhone 12, 13, third-generation iPhone SE. When the company announced its, quote, self-service repair, unquote, initiative last year, Apple said it planned to sell over 200, quote, individual parts and tools, unquote, to customers. Only available in the U.S. for now, but Apple plans to expand the program to other countries as well as additional devices like Macs equipped with M1 chips later this year. Now, I'm making fun of the toolkit because it's a little ridiculous, but if they truly are making parts available to repair shops so that, you know, they don't have to harvest them from dead phones and shit like that, that's actually cool, and I am happy to see that. Parts are available through Apple's self-service repair store. Tool rental kits will also be available to rent. You said you'll believe it when you see it. Well, there's the link. I mean, yeah. Parts are available through Apple's self-service repair store. Tool rental kits will be available to rent for 7 days for a cost of $49. For customers, so $50 for a week. who don't want to buy the tools outright, the company said in a press release. The program marks a significant shift for Apple, which has historically placed limits on the availability of genuine replacement parts. While alternative aftermarket parts are sometimes available, Apple's devices have occasionally shown ominous warning signs if they've been repaired with non-genuine parts. However, with the self-service repair initiative, anyone in the U.S. is free to buy a replacement part directly from Apple, safe in the knowledge that it should function as intended. Apple previously cautioned that its DIY repair program is aimed at, quote, individual technicians with knowledge and experience to repair electronic devices, unquote, and that the, quote, vast majority of customers, unquote, should still go to a professional repair. But there's nothing stopping confident customers from attempting it themselves, and Apple's offering repair manuals available before purchasing the parts. Apple said parts will be sold to customers at the same price its existing authorized repair providers, and that in some cases it'll offer a credit for customers to return a replaced part for recycling. For example, TechCrunch notes that an iPhone 12 or 13 battery costs $69 with a potential $24.15 credit for returning a replaced part. Displays for the same phone range from $225 to $309 with a potential $30 credit for sending back your busted screen. Apple's DIY pricing isn't much cheaper than simply paying the company to conduct the repairs itself, although it gets better once you factor in the discount for sending in the replaced part. Repair specialist iFixit have also raised issues with Apple's requirements that customers provide the IMEI or serial number of their device when purchasing a replacement part for it. The requirement has raised questions about what happens if you try to install a replacement part bought using one phone serial number in a second identical phone. Quote, integrating a serial number check in their checkout process is a dire omen and could allow Apple the power to block even more repairs in the future, unquote. iFixit Elizabeth Chamberlain writes. The launch of Apple's self-service repair program, I'm never going to get that right, comes amidst a wave of DIY repair announcements from other smartphone manufacturers, blah, 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 blah. So in the second article, they've got the toolkit here. It's a $50 rental. Apple says that the rental kit includes two cases, one weighing 43 pounds and another weighing 36 pounds. Stacked on top of each other, the cases will measure 20 inches in width and 47 inches in height. Thankfully, both cases include wheels for easy transportation. They've got some pictures of it here. So it looks like they got these big old machined chunks of aluminum for pressing the phone back together.
Damn.
Yeah, battery and display press, protective covers, and screwdrivers. So apparently for the smaller iPhone, there's only one case with different tooling. But yeah, it's just like, you can do this if you really want to, but look at what a pain in the dick we're going to make it. That's what they're doing. They're just trying to say, see, look how hard this is. You don't want to do this yourself. And I was wondering how they were getting around the part serialization since Apple's been known to do that. And that's why you got to give them the IMEI number so they can burn the right numbers into the device. Because people have bought new iPhone 13s, swapped the parts, and they didn't work. So, you know, these things have serialized parts, and that's how they're getting around it, is you've got to give them your phone details. So that's going to make it really hard if you got an independent repair shop trying to keep inventory, you know? So they'll instead have to go to Apple for every part and just make it a pain in the butt. So it's like,
you know what it used to be meant, what it used to mean when you said the American manufacturing style?
Mm-hmm.
It meant you could take two identical things, or two things were identical things apart and switch out all of the components. Like two Colt 45s, take them apart, switch every screw, spring, or whatever, and you would have two guns that worked.
I don't think it works like that with Apple.
It was a so marvelous a thing, it was demonstrated at two world fairs. And now you can't switch out a screen without a serial number.
Well, the amazing part is, Mad Men, you use the example of guns. A lot of the 3D printed gun stuff, which is fascinating to look at, they use trigger kits and replacement parts and barrels from existing firearms. Because they're so easy to swap out, they just 3D print like new housings and grips and things like that. And so, yeah, if you ever look into the 3D printed gun stuff on Odyssey, like Are We Cool Yet and things like that, that's what they're doing is, okay, yeah, you could, you know, he'd buy this piece of pipe and then, you know, set up a saltwater electrolysis mill and mill it to size. Or you could just, you know, go buy these replacement gun parts if you live in a part of the world where you're allowed to do that. And yeah, you go buy a couple of kits on the internet and then 3D print a bunch of parts and you can slap together a working firearm because, like you were saying, they allow you to swap the parts around. So, yeah, I just, it's like, no, no, we're complying with the right to repair. We've just made it very difficult.
And that's a company that does not want right to repair.
Exactly.
We're going to follow the letter of the law, not the spirit of the law. Of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Apple. Fuck. I don't even know why people would bother dealing with that company. They clearly fucking hate you.
They hate you, but if you want something that works out of the box, a closed sandbox is the way to go.
Well, they also have another
system. I hate giving them credit, but that's the way it is.
They do have another system that incentivizes people to continue using their products. iMessage and FaceTime. These are lock-in. They only work across the Apple stuff. And in my particular case, when it came time to switch out phones again, because I busted... I don't actually know what I did to my old phone. The camera quit working. I don't know if I dropped it or busted it or bent it or something, but damn camera quit working. But so when I decided to, because I wasn't going to change the phone out for a while since, you know, there's no real need to. I mean, you know, you don't buy a new computer every time Intel puts out a new processor unless you have a very specific reason to do so. So I don't personally see the need to swap my phone out every year. But... yeah, I let my family talk me into getting an iPhone because they wanted FaceTime and they wanted the iMessage stuff. And it's not that I was doing anything particularly difficult with my phone anymore. So it's like, yeah, sure, I used to jailbreak the phone and do all the fun stuff and, you know, run Tmux and Termux and a bunch of fun stuff on the Android phone, which was great when I was a little bit more hands-on with things back in the day. But, you know, I mean, at work... lately, I need my phone for some stuff, and we've got all the damned controls in place to where you jailbreak it or you root it. It's one of these things where it's like, well, you know what? I need my email on it. I need to make phone calls and FaceTime. And since FaceTime works with iPhones and not with Android at the moment, you just go with what the – you know, it's peer pressure, kind of. It's my family in this case, but yeah, it was just peer pressure that, hey, we need something that works with this, so you go with that. So I'm sure that's a lot of the lock-in. It's just people who are, you know, so used to using that ecosystem with their social group, whatever it is, that, you know, if they tried to switch off to Android, well, you know, that's
you're only getting okay. Some of the messages for our group now.
Oh, well, anybody who's tried to go from iPhone to Android and the way iMessage works, pain in the ass to get your SMSs started working correctly. Because everybody who's been in conversations with you will still try to send an iMessage, and of course it just won't go anywhere, so you just won't get your messages. Sucks.
I don't know, Milks. Do you have this story in the lineup? Because this looks like it's breaking.
What is it? Let's see. Biden staff leads to reclaim the internet, huh?
It's a huge document. We'll have to go over it next week, I think. It's huge.
Declaration for the... Well, this is probably related to that article that, you know, we were seeing, or the stuff we were seeing about them doing their misinformation office.
Yeah, this is all part of it, so I said that's breaking now.
We're going to have a Ministry of Truth.
We're going to have a Ministry of Truth.
I want to name it the Ministry of Truth.
They're calling it the Department of Misinformation Management.
God, no, Ministry of Truth.
But it's, or, you know, yeah, something like that. But I wanted to talk about that tonight, but my only, there's no good sources. They're all partisan sources, people complaining about it on the right. And it's like, come on. I don't want to like. Yeah. I don't want to be reading the Daily Wire on decking. I mean, so in that
yeah,
section 230
thing.
I'm going
to have to read
thing,
through that later.
Yeah, part of it is they do want to reform Section 230, but we'll have to talk about this next week probably.
Yeah, that document's 3 pages of very fine print.
50 country pledge to reclaim the internet and fight disinformation. Amazing
no.
the stuff that happens the moment an independent operator buys Twitter.
Imagine my shock.
I.e., we have to control the message. It's like, well, what if I want to talk about something else? No, no, you can only discuss the message.
Exactly.
I wish I was just joking. I'm afraid that might be real. Let's continue with the dystopia and talk about this article from the Toronto Star.
God, Canada.
Oh, it's this is bad, man.
Canada's gotten bad, man.
Meet real Freshie's bad. New virtual cashier who works from Nicaragua for $3.75 an hour. And it is a cashier on what looks like a cheap Android tablet, video calling into the restaurant in a stand they've made it. They called and said, "Hi, Percy," where it's obviously somebody just in a call center taking the order and punching it into a website. I do yep. not understand this.
We're going to WebEx waiters.
Many Freshie customers have already encountered Percy. The video calling device is attached to cash registers at a few select Freshie locations across Ontario, and it lights up when customers approach the counter. On the other end of the screen is a cashier wearing a headset, ready to take orders. Unlike the Freshie workers that wrap burritos and mop the floor, these virtual workers are nowhere near the store. Instead, at least some of them process orders from a Nicaraguan call center nearly 6,000 kilometers away, where they earn much less than Ontario's minimum wage. The program is only in the early stages of testing, but Freshie's virtual cashiers are part of a wave of outsourcing and automated technology that is slowly changing Canada's retail industry. For many Ontario retail workers, the implications of these innovations raise a daunting question. How secure is the job?
Apparently not. They're going to outsource you to Nicaragua yeah. and just have a long-distance phone bill.
Freshie, a franchise with 343 restaurants across North America, declined to provide details to the Star about its virtual cashier technology. But in a statement, Freshie's chief business development officer, Paul Hughes, said Percy is operated by a third-party company. I mean, okay, get ready for the quote. This guy is so used to sniffing his own shit. Anyways. Quote, just like with Uber Eats, Skip the Dishes, self-checkout options, and other emerging ordering cashier technologies, Freshie is always looking to be an early tester and adopter of new tech solutions that might make it easier for our customers to order healthy meals and provide and our franchise partners to run more successful restaurants, Hughes said. Somebody pull the stick out of this guy's ass. He probably doesn't know what reality is anymore.
I want to talk to somebody and be like, I want a burrito, double steak, corn pico, shredded cheese, and grilled everything.
Yes, sir. Please do the needful. I mean, that's what it's going to be. I mean, I don't understand this. I do. Okay, I'm going to stop reading this for the moment. We'll come back to it in a second. Why, for a cashier, why in God's earth would you put somebody from the third world in a call center and have them WebEx in so that they can take the order and obviously punch it into a web page?
The skill set to push buttons on a touch screen isn't very high, and they're upping the cost of punching those buttons in, so now they've priced out everyone in Toronto from doing that.
Well, why wouldn't you just put the fucking touchscreen in front of the customer? I've been to a McDonald's in the past year. I've seen the technology. It exists. I mean, it's not the greatest thing, but why would you bother with the call center? Just make them use a self-checkout touchscreen.
Because talking to someone is slightly less annoying than punching the stuff in yourself.
Unless you can't understand their accent because it's so thick. I know that sounds bad, but believe me, I've had to work with a lot of contractors. I mean...
Easy, dude. What is it, Flickies? Is that what they call it?
Freshie?
Freshies clearly hates Canadians.
Oh, that's,
and Canadian
that's
teenagers. Yeah, they do. They fucking hate their own countrymen.
Yeah, the company has not previously spoken publicly about the program, other than to mention several, quote, labor optimization programs in development, unquote. God, that's a scary line from a company. Labor optimization programs. How do I get that on a business card?
Isn't that what Mitt Romney used to do?
Actually,
back
I think
in
it
the
is.
90s?
Yeah. I think it is.
It's another word for laying every motherfucker off.
So we're going to fire everybody who knows what they're doing, and we're going to bring in Indian contractors who don't and hope the company doesn't fall.
Uh-huh. Because they fucking hate their own citizens.
Yeah, and hopes it will, quote, further assist partners in managing costs and protecting profitability, unquote, in a recent corporate filing. But employees at the company's franchise locations told the Star they've been aware of the program since November. The Star verified three locations in Ontario that use these virtual cashiers, two in Toronto and one in Waterloo. One of the locations, and we're going to have to send Suave on a fact-finding mission.
Okay, for the brick.
Yeah, there you go. One of the locations, and... there's going to be future vandalism where people take a taser and hide it in something, or they buy the cell phone case that's got a taser in it, just so they can short this shit out.
Those people are called Luddites. It's a blast from the past. I think they will be no more successful than the previous.
Probably. One of the locations in the Toronto Rosedale neighborhood has been using a Percy cashier since January. Two virtual cashiers who spoke with the Star said that they are located in Nicaragua. I'll say it right. Where they work at a call center that pays them $375 US an hour.
Probably good money in Nicaragua.
Yeah, it probably is. In North America, Freshie typically hires for server positions that pay between $12 and $16 an hour, according to data collected by Glassdoor, an American job search website. In Ontario, where the minimum wage is $15 Canadian, Freshie's virtual cashier program could potentially save the company $10 or more an hour. The practice is entirely legal, multiple employment lawyers told the Star. Well, I'm sure it is. Quote, it's just like any other kind of outsourcing. If you're sending jobs to people in a different country, you're only obligated to pay to comply with the labor standards of that country, said Jonathan Pincus, an employment lawyer and partner at Samfru Turkmen LLP. Quote, being virtually present in Ontario doesn't change that, unquote. Well, somebody might want to tell California that, because if you've ever looked at California's cat tax codes. Anyways.
Were you physically present in our state anytime during your life or a previous life? They owe us taxes.
Oh, dude. The article I was reading is they went after a guy, a business owner, because he was a software development house, and he did contract development with a guy. And apparently he lived in California before he moved to Hawaii. So California declared that his employee was a California resident. Therefore, his business had to pay California taxes on the business's income out of, Minnesota or something like that? No, it was Illinois. It was Illinois. I'm sorry. So, yeah, I mean... Well, apparently the guy he hired as a contract programmer was a server in the article I read, Al Hazard. So, it's like the most tenuous connection they could find, and then they declared he owed taxes in California. In fact, apparently tax lawyers say if you earn any income that might possibly be related to California, to file a California tax return so that it at least starts the statute of limitations. Because if you never file with them because you don't think you have anything to do with California, they have no limitation on how long they can go after you. It is insane if you ever look into California tax law. So, sorry, but I was reading that earlier and then that line brought that up. So, Yeah, Ontario's Employment Standards Act is applied to workers who are either working in Ontario or perform work outside of Ontario that is deemed a, quote, continuation of work performed in Ontario. Freshie is likely relying on the argument that their cashier's work is not a continuation of work performed in Ontario, but rather another task that call center workers can complete in another jurisdiction, said Michael Wright, a lawyer and founding partner at Wright Henry LLP. Still, the program drew outrage from labor organizers who see the practice as a way to circumvent Ontario's minimum wage laws, and they would be correct.
Yeah.
Quote, shipping jobs to an offshore location to pay less than a third of our minimum wage here is extremely disappointing and quite frankly disgusted at a company like Freshie that would take this approach, unquote, said B. Bursk, president of the Canadian Labor Congress. Quote, we need jobs that pay taxes in Canada and help boost our economic activity, unquote. Yeah, and the article goes on saying the increase of outsourcing, you know, kicked up in COVID and talking about, you know, the fact that Canada's minimum wage is $15 an hour. With inflation, that's not that much, really. But, I mean, compared to previous...
With the taxes that Canada pays?
Yeah.
$15 an hour ain't shit, man.
But I'm just saying, if I walked up to a cashier and it was a fucking iPad FaceTiming to some poor guy in a call center in the
I'm leaving.
World, yeah, right? It's like, I'm not putting up with this.
Call the manager, hey, dude. See that? Not acceptable. Fuck you. I'm out. And then later on that night, I'll come throw a brick through their fucking window.
Well, maybe not recommending the second part, but...
Man, fuck them. If they hate their fellow countrymen that much, they can fuck off and die.
I'm
sick of pretending that they don't fucking hate us.
This is depressing looking at this.
Yeah.
It's like, are you serious? I mean, because here's the thing. And here's where I see this going. Okay, right now they're contracting the third world to do it, right? Well, eventually people are going to complain that they can't understand the accent. They're going to complain about lag. They're going to complain about them getting the orders wrong. So we need people who understand. Where can you get free labor with people who understand the local language? Prisons! Prisons already run call centers. Why don't we do this with prisoners so we don't have to fucking pay them at all? Or like a dollar or something like that, whatever it is. It's a stupid cheap rate. Tell me I'm wrong that we're not going to start enslaving prisoners out of prisons to do call center bullshit like this.
It fucking wouldn't shock me anymore. I mean, how much do you have to hate the Canadian youth? Like, that server's job should be for a 17, 18-year-old's first position. You know what I mean?
So they can learn how to have a job and deal with a boss and
communications.
What a business does. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, they fucking hate their own youth.
My first job was working in a fucking fast food restaurant, usually as a cashier, sometimes as a fry, as a deep fry guy. But, and I'll tell you what, I knew how to fucking clean a deep fryer. Most people didn't bother.
I worked a cafe kitchen, night shifts, for months. Fuck that, I'll never do it again. That is a hard fucking job. Because chefs are cunts and they will throw knives at you.
To this day, because I had to cook so much chicken working at a deli, to this day I am not a fan of cooking my own chicken. I have no problem going to a restaurant and getting it. I don't dislike chicken, but I practically refuse to cook it myself because I had to cook it so much of that shit every day. I have handled enough raw chicken in my life. Thank you.
Were you nice enough to make sure the pen feathers were all out?
Yes. One of the reasons I don't like doing it myself anymore is because
a step up from some of the delis I've been to.
Especially in the ones that are covered in the slime and you got something. Yeah, oh my God. Hate that shit. Although, at the time, I had figured I actually liked doing. One of the reasons I had to cook so much of it was because I didn't like dealing with the customers because. It's like, you know,
customers are cunts.
Well, I mean, not only that, but you'd see people run their shopping carts into a display and knock them over, or they look behind them, see a price tag on the shelf, pick up an item that's in, you know, on a completely different shelf, and then say, "Well, it was that price." No, it wasn't. And then they argue with you and scream because, you know, they can't find their product or whatever it is. Dude, I had this one old woman who would come in and demand her cut of bologna. I had no clue what she was talking about, so I asked her what it was, and she got mad and demanded the manager. So we got the manager. Well, the manager apparently knew who this woman was and knew what her cut of bologna was. Because she wouldn't tell you what it was. It was one specific brand, and she wanted it cut about a quarter inch thick, like a dinner slice of bologna.
Wow. It's like,
good God, who wants a quarter inch?
I do. You fry that sucker up, stick it on toast, and it's amazing.
Oh, bologna. I like a fried bologna sandwich. I just don't get it. Yeah, it was one of the German brands. But it was just like, but she wouldn't tell anyone what it was. And she did that to several employees. And I think it's because she usually would manage to con them into giving her something for free because she had to complain. But, I mean, it's like she won't tell you what the fuck it was. Yeah, once you learn it, it wasn't so bad. But it's just like, but anyways, I had one of those construction cell phone belt holder things, and my phone didn't actually fill it up, so I hit a little creative MP3 player behind it, because at the time my cell phone was not an MP3 player. Of course, today your phone's everything. So I could run I actually clipped an old pair of earbuds, clipped one of the earbuds off, so I had a mono earbud. I could listen to stuff while I was working with the earbuds and just run the wire under my shirt down to my cell phone holder. Worked wonderfully. So, yeah, being able to sit in the back and do the cooking and stuff like that, actually, it wasn't that bad. I just get really tired of handling raw chicken. Where were we? Had we finished that story?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Put a brick through it.
Put a brick through it, yeah. You know, I'm not opposed to you putting a brick through the fucking tablet that they're calling you through.
I've shopped at a locally owned grocery store for two reasons. One, they actually get some stuff that box stores don't get for some stupid reason. And two, every register was a human being until this week when I went in and they put in their first set of U scans.
I bet they still don't have your Cherry Jones soda.
Fuck no, they don't, because that shit ceased to exist. Jones targeted me specifically and decided they didn't want to serve my soda anymore because they're communists. And they found out that I'm a very free market libertarian, and they're charging me. They're punishing me for it. They literally discontinued cherry soda. How the fuck do you discontinue that?
I think that's an act of racism, Madman.
It's the most, like, common not cola whatever flavor you get. Every Coke product has a cherry flavor, except for Jones. And, oh, well, they say they do. They keep a diet one. Diet isn't fucking cherry. It's fucking diet. I made the mistake because they labeled it sugar-free, and I thought, sugar-free? This is healthier for me, right? It's not diet, at least. No, it's another name for fucking diet. Oh, God, I hate them.
So you don't want to do rails of sat. What is that fucking, that fake sugar shit?
Sucrose.
Saccharin.
Oh, saccharin, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that shit tastes horrible.
What's the next story?
Next story is
from... I think
from...
they committed a racism on you, Madman.
The next story is from the Financial Times. Twitter admits overstating audience figures for 3 years.
Yeah, that's not an oversight, I'm sorry to say.
Twitter admitted to overstating its audience figures by almost 2 million users for almost 3 years, as it reported its first quarterly results since the social media company agreed to a $44 billion buyout from Tesla chief Elon Musk. This is the second time that Twitter has miscalculated its user numbers after discovering in 2017 that a similar error had gone unnoticed for 3 years. You see, this is why I don't bother trying to find a listener count and don't put any of these statistics programs on Pure Decking. I don't want to know how many listeners I actually have, because it's either going to be terrifying or depressing either way. So I'd just rather not, you know? It's like, no,
yeah, like,
the best answer, how many users you got? I don't know.
They didn't. They knew exactly what they were doing.
The latest mistake was revealed just days after Twitter agreed to a leveraged buyout by Musk. The entrepreneur had hinted at plans to reshape Twitter's business model, which at present relies on advertising for more than 90% of its revenue. Given the deal, Twitter's first quarter earnings report offered minimal commentary and did not include any guidance for the rest of the year. The company is also foregoing its usual conference call with analysts. Well, that actually makes a lot of sense. You know, okay, they're now in the middle of an acquisition. Having been on both sides of that now multiple times, I can tell you, once an acquisition contract is signed, because there's different stages to this. You have the contract, which is you have a contract to acquire, which is where you have somebody who makes an offer and then you accept the offer. That is the beginning of the process. Then you draw up the formal purchase agreement in which you lay out all the nitty-gritty, all the bullshit. What equipment is coming with the purchase of the company? What employee account is coming with the purchase of the company? What, you know, who's staying on, you know, at an executive level? You'll have agreements in there to, like, okay, guarantee this, you know, this person, this senior person, a job for so many years. This person becomes a department head. This person, I mean, all of it gets laid out into a legal agreement and signed. And then you'll have a legal day one. And then, now in this case, they're not merging with anybody, so they're just getting purchased by a new owner. So after that legal day one, then he can start implementing policy changes. Anything that happens before that is interesting, because they may do carve-outs in that big legal purchase agreement of, oh, no, you didn't buy this data. This data is coming with us, and we're going to go do something different. That happens in purchase agreements for a company, where you'll have individuals who don't wish to come with the company, but they'll want to keep chunks of the company, and whether the purchaser agrees with that or not, it all depends, right? You know, and it's all on who's dealing with what. So until all of that comes out and hits the fan, and honestly, they'll never publish the full purchase agreement, but I guarantee you the regulators will see it. So it'll probably get leaked.
Possibly.
But yeah, in the meantime, once that kind of stuff happens, most of the time your management just goes quiet, because there's usually non-disparagement agreements in that initial purchase agreement to purchase a contract. So, yeah, they just won't say anything because they don't want to risk breaching that. Apparently, there was some very specific language about Musk, you know, tweeting about the merger but not disparaging the business or Twitter or the board when tweeting about the buyout. But, okay. Yeah, so it's very... you need lawyers for this shit, because it's very much about whose lawyers are better at making arguments in front of a judge at this point, right? So, anyways, so yeah, it's not at all weird that once a purchase agreement is made that, you know, the all the reports are basically just by the numbers, here it is, please leave us alone. let's see. First quarter revenues of $1.2 billion came in slightly below Wall Street's forecast, which Twitter blamed on, quote, headwinds associated with the war in Ukraine, unquote. Well, that is the it's the easy excuse. It's the easy thing to point at and say, that. I agree with you. How is a good question, but whatever. However, Twitter's monetizable daily active users, its unique metric for tracking its audience, came in better than investors expected at 229 million, with year-on-year growth of 6.4% in the U.S. and 18% in the rest of the world. Net income jumped to $513 million thanks to a one-off benefit from the $1 billion sale of its mobile advertising unit MoPub to AppLovin, which closed in January. So, see, that's exactly what I was talking about a minute ago, where they sold a chunk of the company. They took this advertising unit, which was likely an internal department in Twitter, said, okay, now it's a free agent, and sold it to a different company. So that means they would have been the work products, data, applications associated with those work products, and the employees. And probably some executives or management. So... shares in Twitter rose about 1% to $49.05 in early trading, below the $54.20 price at which Musk agreed to buy the company. Twitter also revealed what it described as an error introduced in the first quarter of 2019 that, quote, resulted in an overstatement of MDAU, unquote, that went undiscovered for almost 3 years. The difference between the figures Twitter reported over the past year and the true count ranged between 1.4 million and 1.9 million, it said, or just below 1% of the total. I don't know, that's still a lot of users. And you could get FTC filing penalties for that kind of shit.
I was going to say, was that because of the Ukraine war as well?
It did not provide a reconciliation for 2019 or most of 2020. Well, if they're not providing a reconciliation, that means they're probably not going back and updating their filings. So I don't know what that means. Advertisers rely on accurate estimates of the audience size when planning their campaigns. Yeah, there's still the fraud charge there. Quote, in March of 2019, we launched a feature that allowed people to link multiple separate accounts together in order to conveniently switch accounts, unquote, the company said. Quote, an error was made at the time such that actions taken via the primary account resulted in all linked accounts being counted as MDAU, unquote. Fake or spam accounts represented, quote, fewer than 5%, unquote, of its MDAU during the first quarter. Well, since Twitter says you're not supposed to be able to have fake or spam accounts, how would they know? They're literally supposed to be banning and blocking fake accounts. Musk said that he plans to crack down on bots or fake accounts when he takes over. In 2017, Twitter had to lower its previously reported user figures since 2014 by as much as 2 million per quarter after it discovered it had been mistakenly counting activity from third-party applications as unique users.
Yeah, right. Accidentally.
Next article is from Reuters. Some North Koreans find ways around government smartphone control. Basically, people in North Korea are jailbreaking their phones.
Good for them.
And I must have reloaded it from Reuters too many times because it said I've reached my free article limit. So I didn't realize this was paywalled because it loaded earlier. Never mind. Fuck these guys. Fuck these guys. We're not doing this article. It's paywalled. Fuck them. Fuck Reuters.
All right.
Stripping that from show notes. Too bad. Was an interesting article about them jailbreaking phones and using VPNs to try to get out of the North Korean control.
Good for them. Don't get caught.
Next article. Do you mean double and triple accounting all the users' alt accounts that they had linked to their main account? Yes. Yes, that's exactly what they were doing, Alhazard. They were... if I had set up a main account and then two sub accounts, each account was getting counted like three times because each account would start at, it's like, oh, it's linked to these. Oh, it's linked to these. Oh, it's linked to these. So yeah, they were just, and of course they didn't fix it. Why would you fix a problem like that when look what it's doing for the share price? That's a feature, not a bug.
Uh-huh. What's a little bit of defraud?
Depends on if you get caught. And in this day and age...
It wasn't fraud, it was a programming error, sir.
Well, and given this day and age, given what the fine probably is, it's probably less than you made, which makes it the fiduciary responsible thing to do. It is responsible to fraud the government because the fines are less than what we made. Make that argument in court, Your Honor.
That one hurts, because I know it's true.
Next article. This one's from PC Mag. Google can now remove your phone number and address from search results. About fucking time.
They couldn't before? What?
Google is now letting users request to remove their phone numbers, physical addresses, and email addresses from the company's search results. The new policy is intended to prevent bad actors from using people's sensitive information in malicious ways, like identity theft or in-person stalking. Quote, the internet is always evolving, with information popping up in unexpected places and being used in new ways, so our policies and protections need to evolve too, unquote, said Michael Chang, Google's global policy lead for search. Yeah, they're called data brokers, and they leave up a whole bunch of shit to try to get people to sign up for their services. And of course they share information with each other. And the amusing part is when a data broker gets shit wrong and has your phone number attached to somebody else, you can never get it fixed. It's easier to abandon the phone number and get a new one than it is to get these assholes to stop calling you looking for George. And just in case anybody's wondering,
you can't order a pizza. I am not Papa John's. You're a faggot.
And just in case anyone is wondering, no, my real first name is not George. Mm. There's a joke in there about my name being John Doe. It's like, yeah, close enough.
I thought you were patio furniture.
Nope, first name City, last name Morgue. That way I get to answer the phone. You stab them, we slab them. Will this be carry out or delivery?
Dine in.
Oh, high roller. Oh, I need to get somebody to run a good vampire game. I haven't had that in a while. Madman, it's your turn to run a game.
Are you Italian, sir?
Not anymore. Anyways, so you could already request that Google remove certain personally identifiable information from search results, but options were limited to national ID numbers, bank account and credit card numbers, along with images of your personal signature and medical records. Users can also ask Google to remove non-consensual nudes of themselves and deepfake porn. Good to know. Wednesday's announcement expands that personally identifiable information to include, quote, personal contact info, unquote, including physical address, phone number, and email addresses. In addition, you can request that Google pull any of your login credentials from its search results. Using the tool could help users protect themselves from computer hacks and identity theft schemes. You can start a removal request by visiting Google's support page. On the topic, which will ask for the URL that contains the personally identifiable information. Users can submit up to 1,000 URLs on one form. However, Google won't necessarily approve every request. Quote, when we receive removal requests, we will evaluate all the content on the page to ensure that we're not limiting the availability of other information that is broadly useful, for instance, in news articles, unquote, the company said. Quote, we will also evaluate if the content appears as part of a public record on the sites of government or other official sources. In such cases, we won't make removals, unquote. If Google does grant the request, it can decide to remove the URL containing the sensitive personal information from all search results. In other cases, it will only remove the URL for search queries that include your name. Quote, this can happen when the policy violating information on a page is acquired by content that is of public interest or has content about other individuals, unquote, Google added. Well, shit. That content about other individuals? There's all of your data brokers. I was hoping this was really going to hurt the data brokers, but I guess not.
Nope.
I do like the, you can't remove your signatures if it's part of a public record. That means everyone who enters into a lot of different contracts, their signatures will be on the internet forever.
Well, next time you want to forge an interesting contract with Elon Musk, that ought to make it easy. Just go get his Twitter purchase agreement.
I don't know if it'll be on there, but if he ever had a mortgage.
I don't know if he did or
not. Find that online on a lot of different mortgages.
Yeah, probably.
Elon doesn't strike me as a man who takes out mortgages.
Not anymore.
No. Not personally, anyway. Somebody else does that paperwork.
So, and for the last article, I think Twitch is going to start a downward spiral for itself here. We'll see. This is from Gizmodo.com. 2022 is shaping up to be a rough year for content creators and sellers trying to make a living through major tech platforms. Sellers on Amazon and Etsy are also already facing increased fees, and now pay cuts may reportedly make their way to Twitch. A new Bloomberg report citing people familiar with Twitch's pay planning. I hate this. Reciting people familiar with Twitch's pay planning, so that's anonymous sources, meaning somebody could be making it up. Just throwing that out there, because you need to know how to read this shit. Whenever they say citing people familiar with the matter, don't give names or don't give positions, for all you know, it's somebody making it up. So they may not do this, is my point. But apparently they're looking at it. claims the company wants to incentivize streamers to run more ads in addition to considering reducing the portion of subscription fees allocated to performers. More specifically, the site's top streamers would reportedly see their share of subscriptions dip down from 70% to 50%, according to Bloomberg. The company is also considering introducing multiple pay tiers with different criteria required to qualify for each. All told, these changes... Yeah, so they're money makers, the guys who make the most money probably get a better deal.
Dude, if you're the top performer, you should get a better cut.
If you're a top performer, you shouldn't be taking the standard deal. You ought to be signing a contract with them. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'd just be.
You ought to be negotiating your rates
contracts.
At that point.
Yeah,
if you are that high on the totem pole, you ought to be negotiating your rates.
Yeah,
that's all I mean by that. I don't. So. The company is also considering introducing multiple pay tiers. Oh, I already read that. All told, these changes are intended to boost Twitch's profitability, although it could come at the expense of the community's most active users. In other words, yeah, they're like, well, we control the money flow. Why don't we just keep more of it? That's what they're saying. Twitch did not immediately respond to Gizmodo's request for comment. On the flip side, sources speaking with Bloomberg said the company may consider easing up on its exclusivity restrictions, which would let creators stream on other platforms and potentially rake in some additional income there as well. Other tentative monetization concerns come amid a time of flux at Twitch. On one hand, the company is riding high on pandemic-induced viewership surge. Some 24% of U.S. internet users between the ages of 16 to 64 say they began watching more live streams during the pandemic, according to Global Web Index data viewed by Insider Intelligence. On the other hand, though, even with the uptick in eyeballs, Twitch is simultaneously reeling from what Bloomberg calls a mass exodus of employees disappointed in the company's direction. Some 300 employees reportedly left Twitch last year, with another 60 leaving in the first 3 months of 2020. Some top creators have left too. In the past year, both Dr. Lupo and Tim the Tatman, two prominent streamers, left the site for rival YouTube. I does anybody know who those guys are?
No, I don't know shit, man.
Okay. I guess we're getting old. Twitch streamers aren't the only ones bracing financial. Yeah, okay. Amazon's adding a 5% fuel and inflation surcharge to third-party sellers. Who else was hiking? Etsy is increasing transaction fees by 30%. So, yeah, interesting that, what do you expect when you're subject to somebody else's platform? And it's like, oh no, we're not going to lose profitability. I mean, no, we're not taking a pay cut. We're not making as much money as we thought we would. Fine. Screw that. We're going to rebalance the equation. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is with something like a Twitch is there are competitors out there. I mean, you've got YouTube streaming. You've got Facebook streaming, kind of. Then you've got smaller – you got stuff like Odyssey. You got stuff like Rumble. You got stuff like – what's the one you like? Does BitChute do live streaming, are you?
Yeah, I think they do.
Yeah. So I guess – I mean, I guess what I'm thinking here is there's enough competition in that space that if Twitch is going to start hiking their prices like that, or hiking their cut, I guess would be the way to put it, either they're looking around and seeing that they could make more based on their competitors, or they really think people aren't going to drop and go to something else. I don't know. I mean, maybe they think the audience
Twitch,
is there. Yeah, so
Twitch doesn't make its money off game streamers, though. It makes its money off simps. That all the bikini streamers get a cut.
Yeah,
I don't think there's much gaming going on at Twitch, like for big money stakes. It's more simping over there.
Well, if that's the case, I mean, I don't know.
So, I don't know. I don't watch other people play games. I play games. I've just never saw the interest in watching other people play.
Yeah, I like I said, I don't know enough about it. So that's I read the article because it was interesting that they're looking at doing this.
I watch BSV play Elder Ring, but the only reason I did that is because I'll never play that game. That's not my game. And I wanted to have a look at how good it was.
Yeah. So I don't know. I honestly don't know enough about how the business model of all the streaming stuff works. I mean, of course, I know the technical side, but you know, if I do any videos or anything like that on any of these platforms, it's going to be as a hobby. It's not going to be as a, you know, income. So I've never looked at it like that. So I don't know. I've never put the work in. So anyways, anything on that Madman before we do Digital Dojo and call it out since we're getting close on time?
No, I'm good.
All right. All right, what I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is an interesting little tool I came across. Actually, I came across this professionally. I'm probably going to end up using it. I believe it's written in Go. It's a little tool. I found it for the Amazon stuff, but apparently they're also working on Google Cloud, and eventually they're going to get Azure and Oracle put into it as well. It's fairly actively developed. It's a tool for auditing access rights into cloud services, specifically IAM management. So that's accounts and what accounts can access. So what you're doing is you're looking at enumerating out who has permissions to what in a cloud environment. So if you need to come in and audit somebody's Amazon account and figure out what accounts can do what, this tool gives you a report. You run it, it runs out, it's got a couple of different profiles, and you can use that to look for, you know, known flaws, things that shouldn't be set up that way. Apparently, they support Google Cloud as well. I've actually never used Google Cloud. Used Azure, I've used AWS. I've never actually used Google Cloud or the Oracle Cloud. So, but yeah, the examples are shown here. We're looking for flaws in Amazon IAM access can show where you've got things set up to where accounts have rights to basically do whatever they want, and you probably don't expect them to have those kind of rights. So, and I guess to explain why a tool like this is important, well, if I'm a bad guy and I can get into your Amazon account, I can spin up my own services. I can do anything I want in your Amazon account, and guess whose bill it's going on? So, understanding what accounts are at risk and getting those things properly controlled is really important if you're going to run your business in like an Amazon or a Google Cloud. So, yeah, a tool like this is pretty handy if you're in that. But that's all I've got for you today. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it, peer decking every Thursday. My voice is going. Madman, closing thoughts.
Musk isn't Jesus Christ, and he isn't the devil. He's just a dude that will hopefully make Twitter less shit.
Are you? Closing thoughts.
I don't think shit'll happen. Everything will be the same. If you're looking to kill a couple of days on a streaming show, I recommend Strike Back. It's full action. Everybody gets the woman at the end of the day. Guns don't run out of bullets, but it's just bad enough to be good. Strike Back. Highly recommend it.
There you go. In the IRC tonight, we had Al Hazard, CyberLard, Psychros, Madman, and myself, Galaxy 15 Radio Site and Subreddit. That's it. Let's play sounds.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Attention, attention. There is no cause for alarm.
But shut up, Wesley.
Stop passing out.